excuses. You know, I could have used 1,000 excuses. You know, it's too hard. You know, Nashville's so far away. I have to always come back to Australia. You know, all that kind of stuff. If you really want something, there's no excuse. There, you know, as I've had to climb the biggest mountain to get where I am right now, and you know, when I get back to Nashville, I'll be able to stand on that, you know, that top point and look out and go, okay, this has been a tough 3 years, but we got here. So yeah, if you really want something bad enough, no excuse.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts. This is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I love talking with other artists about the power of songwriting and their journey to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. Please support the podcast by subscribing, or you can buy us a coffee, all through the website songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to a songwriter tryst. Here we are, and I'm going to say this right, hopefully. Michael Saletta, is that right?
You got it right. That's exactly right. I've had Salada, which I used to get called Salada biscuits at school. Different
at least
variations.
They taste good with Vegemite.
Well, they do. Butter and Vegemite, absolutely.
See, sale soulmate. All right, yeah. Michael. Let's start by you telling us a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
Okay. I'm a song, primarily a songwriter now, obviously musician, multi-instrumentalist. I was born in Sale, which is a country town. Yes. In Gippsland, Victoria, Australia, for those people listening internationally. I actually lived just outside of Sale, a little bit south of Sale. So I grew up like country in the bush, kangaroos, emus in the backyard kind of thing. My dad, he worked for a company called APM, which they would cut down, you know, the big massive pine trees, and then they would replant them and do that stuff. And then he ended up working for Esso. So growing up there was amazing, you know, because we had a kangaroo as a kid, you know, as a kid that my dad rescued, which was really, really cool. So it's kind of funny coming full circle. I'm actually a true country boy that's now writing country music. And my mum, I guess my music history pretty much comes from my mum. She was a rock and roll dancer, and a rock and roll champion in the Gippsland area.
Cool.
And her brothers, nearly all of them were musicians. So Uncle Graham, Uncle John, Uncle Billy, and Uncle, forgotten the other uncle now. Uncle Bruce.
Okay, how could you forget that?
They were all musicians, and they were in a band in Sale. So, so growing up in the country, it was music all the time. And my mum, as it turned out, because I got my parents' record collection now, Charlie Pride, lots of Charlie Pride records, which is pretty cool. You know, when you become a teenager, you kind of think that's a bit daggy and what have you, and but then, you know, you become an adult and you go, oh my goodness, that is so cool.
Yeah.
That, you know, so it was pretty, you know, pretty kind of across the board, you know, Elvis, I think everyone was into Elvis back then, you know, the Beatles and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of, you know, where I come from, and the music influence definitely come from mum and her side of the family. And they asked me if I wanted to learn guitar when I was 12, and said yes. And as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah.
So I've been, you know, that was 1984. So it's been a minute or two since 1984 when I first started doing music. But you know, when you're that young, you're not really kind of too serious. You're just learning. And you know, I learned, you know, Country Roads, Proud Mary, Shutters and Boards by Charlie Pride. They were some of the first songs that I ever learned how to play on guitar. Which was pretty cool looking back. So that was musically that was my country country life growing up. And I guess 16 was my first band, and that was called Phoenix Rose, but the O and the E were backwards because we wanted the rose, like we wanted a cross thing, so the rose would go down across the middle of the Phoenix.
That's cool.
And because I, you know, learning guitar and everything, I had trouble, you know, back in the 80s, we didn't have, you know, ultimate guitar tabs.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy to work out songs. And you had to order sheet music, which took weeks in the country, mm-hmm. as you may know.
Yeah. Gotta love the post.
Yeah, yeah. So it was that thing of like, okay, I know how to play enough chords, and I started writing songs, you know, for the band. And you know, I've been writing songs ever since. I wouldn't say that they were amazing back then. I still remember my first ever song. I can still play it. And one day at Nashville, it was called Satisfaction. So I was into hair bands in the 80s. So I was a big Poison, Jovi, Motley Crue, all that kind of stuff. So it was really lyrically like that. So it was
very cool.
It was good for the time, but, you know, it really doesn't suit nowadays, that's for sure.
Didn't age well.
No, but I do want to do it one night at a writer's round in Nashville just for a bit of fun to say, hey, this was the first ever song I wrote back in 1988.
Yeah. Another musical podcast which I went on, it was called My Song Sucks. So if you ever want to listen to another musical podcast, that is a recommendation one that I did do an episode on. And what they do is they listen to your first ever recorded or first ever song versus like something that you've done more recently. And it is quite funny to go through, and it's so cringeworthy to listen back to something that you did as a kid.
But, I mean, that's where we start. You know, it's always going to sound awful. And I taught guitar for a little while. From 2016 to 2019 in Melbourne. And I explain that to the students, you know, because everyone wants to learn how to play, a song straight away. And it's like, you're going to suck for a while. That's just how it is. You know, no one can just pick up a guitar and go boom, boom, and, sing amazingly. There's still a little bit of fine tuning, obviously. Even those that do have a voice still have to fine tune it. So yeah, from 1988, when I was around about 16, that's when I started the songwriting journey, and I still have in Nashville boxes of all those lyrics from way back then. I never threw anything out. I've got cassettes of the first two EPs that I recorded with that band.
I love that. That's so cool. I want to hear it. I'm the same. Like I can't, when I'm clearing, I've been clearing out this weekend, actually. It's spring here, so doing a bit of spring cleaning. Every time I do it, I've always got piles and piles of books with lyrics in it, and I'm like, I can't throw it out. Even if it's like a song that I've already recorded and released, and it's like one of the first, writes, when you rewrite and rewrite. So it's like it's not even anything close to what it is anymore and what it became. I still don't want to throw it out. I don't know why. I'm very sentimental to that sort of stuff.
I understand. And I think even more so now, because like when I'm writing, it's all on Google Docs. So there's no more of that, the actual handwriting anymore. So having that nostalgic part of that's where it all started, it's just cool to have it there.
Mm. With songwriting, you said you just picked it up for this band at 16. Was it like any sort of training, or like how do you think you intuitively knew? Did your uncles influence you in your writing process?
No, not at all, because they were mostly doing covers. Uncle Billy was the only one that he, I remember Mum had a 12-inch of, I think it was like what they call an EP back then, which I think maybe had two songs or one song on one side and another, on the other, but it was a big size. And I think it wasn't 33 speed. It was the 50 or whatever speed that is. Cause there used to be three speeds on an LP on a record player.
Jeez, okay.
I don't know. It was just listening to the hair bands, I think. And just going, it's still to this day, even writing songs, it's like, where did that melody come from? Obviously, there's only so many chord progressions we have, and all this song, that first song was A, G, D, back to the A, which was a pretty, it's a pretty
basic,
pretty ordinary kind of basic thing, but it was that thing that like, okay, I've just put together a whole bunch of words that rhyme. The chorus sounds different than the verse. Let's add some electric guitar. I wasn't a great singer or a guitar player then, but there was just something. It was like, okay, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And even the other songs that I wrote after that, and when I've listened back, you know, in the last 5 years, it's like, okay, I'm singing out of key. My notes are absolutely awful on the guitar for the lead solos. But there was something in the ability to structure a song, you know, the verse, chorus, the bridge, all that kind of stuff, that it just, I don't know, it didn't fall out of the sky, but it was just kind of a natural ability, whether it was just that thing of listening to music and kind of subconsciously understanding how it all worked.
Yeah, you picked up on the patterns of what was there already.
Yeah.
You kind of got the gist. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you know, pop music and rock music and even country and you know, all different styles of music, they have different formulas, have how they're, you know, put together. But, you know, that style that I was doing back in the 80s, the hairband stuff, had a particular, you know, this is how it usually goes, you know, with the big blistering guitar solo that I played very badly. But it was in there, you know.
Do you have, like, moments in your songwriting life now, you know, from 16 to now, where you feel like something happened that improved your songwriting ability? Is it just been a constant continual growth as you've continued to do it for so many years, or do you think there's been things that really kind of boosted you up, like courses you did or books you've read or just experiences or aha moments?
Yeah, I actually think all of those things. I think, you know, when the other guys in the band, that first band, started writing with me, you know, that changed, because it's like you're getting that different perspective. And then the next band after that, writing with different people and how they write, becomes an influence on you. And even now, you know, the people that I write with in Nashville influence, I've never written it like that or tried that kind of thing. So that is definitely a thing. I think your peers is probably the biggest influence for me. But I think the turning point was when I joined NSAI, you know, Nashville Songwriters Association International, which is based in Nashville. I joined that, and that was through the advice of Mark Moffat, who's the APA rep in Nashville. I had reached out to him when I was, you know, planning a trip, and I can't remember who it was that put me onto him, but, you know, said, hey, reach out to this guy. He's based in Nashville. He looks after APA writers, and he recommended joining NSAI. And so I went on a three-month trip in 2019 to Nashville, and the first thing I did was song camp with NSAI.
Cool.
And so that was, I think, 110 or something people that went to. It was a three-day event.
Yep.
So you were put in a room with people you'd never met before. So I ended up in a room with five other writers. So there were six of us. And over 2 days, you know, we had two-hour slots on the first day, and then the second day we had a two-hour slot to finish the song, basically. And during that time, it was like listening to professionals talking about their experience and, you know, what it takes to be a professional songwriter, you know, the formula behind, you know, if you actually want to be a professional, serious songwriter, this is the formula. You know, there is, as you probably know, there's a formula to pop music. And it's, I don't believe it's a sellout, because you can still be a great songwriter and write hit songs. And you can still be a great songwriter and just write songs for the fun of it, you know, just for yourself. So that experience for those 3 days, I met so many great people that I'm still in contact with, that I still write with. Two people that were at that event, we've signed we signed a single song contract back in 2021. And then this year we signed a sync contract in Nashville. And that was, you know, just two songs that we'd written together. Thank you. And yeah, the relationships that I made on that trip, not only at Song Camp, but the relationships during that 3 months of being in Nashville and just going out every single day and just grinding away, meeting people. And some of those people that I met in 2019 were a part of the petition for my O-1 visa. So they wrote letters of recommendation. They're like, yeah, we've seen you've been working your buns off, you know, to get this, and we're totally happy to support you. You know, it's that funny thing that the relationships that you build at the time, you may not see anything come of it until years down the track. And I think it's important to be a good person to everybody. And always have an open heart, you know, when you're meeting people, especially in Nashville, and just music in general. So, yeah, NSAI has made, apart from that whole peer group thing that I've talked about, NSAI was definitely the biggest impact because I've had top, you know, I've had songs in the top 10 of their song contest. I had two in 2021 and then one this year as well. So as a bunch of other recognitions with, you know, with NSAI and, you know, done courses, I've done the Liz Rose thing, I've done, yeah, a bunch of other stuff that they've done because I don't think you ever finish learning how to write songs. I think it's a forever learning experience. So they're probably the two biggest things for me.
Awesome. So was 2019 like the year that kind of really pushed you into being a full-time professional songwriter, or was there something else? Like, why did you end up in Nashville in 2019?
Okay. So I met my wife at a wedding. I was the wedding singer.
And I love that.
She was a guest. Actually, she was the girl I'm staying with, Cass, here in Brisbane. She invited Sarah to the wedding. Mm-hmm. And Sarah had just not long moved to Melbourne, and Cass is, you know, here. And Cass's friend was marrying my friend. So my wife was the plus one to Cass, and you know, we saw each other from across the room kind of thing. So the groom, I was in my second band with as a teenager. So we'd been lifelong buddies. We were teenage buddies and we're in a band together that we supported Roxas, Screaming Jets, Nick Barker and the Reptiles back in the early 90s. So we had we did an album and all that kind of stuff. So he had asked me and another one of our band members, Christian, we were doing like a covers duo thing together, and he goes, "Hey, do you want to play at the wedding?" We're like, "Absolutely." And the drummer was coming down from Queensland. It was like, we're going to get the band back together for a moment, so, which was cool. So from that, Steve and his wife were moving to Nashville to open a cafe, which was 37 degrees south. It was in Bellmead. It's no longer open. But that kind of got the talk going. Well, we'll come and visit you in Nashville. And just kind of back and forth with him, I didn't realize at the time that you could be a professional full-time songwriter in Nashville.
Right.
Like, you know, just being in a band the whole time, it was always, you know, I wrote songs for the band and that was it, you know, kind of thing. That was just
But then you got to do the band thing as well. You got to do the music and the touring and the production and
yeah.
all that business stuff.
Yeah. So Steve and Natasha had moved to Nashville, and Sarah and I had planned a 6-week trip to the US in 2018/early, you know, so it was like late December 2018. All of January 2019, and we went to Nashville for a week to visit Steve and Natasha. And that was kind of, I did a couple of co-writes while I was there. You know, went to NSAI that week, met some people, did the Studio B thing. We did the touristy stuff, and I had like an awakening at Studio B because walking in there, it's kind of hard to explain, but you know, I don't know whether you've ever been there, but they've got a whole bunch of records, like record covers on the walls, and it's like the Everly Brothers and just groups that my parents really liked. And I'm going, what's going on here? And I walked into the second room, which had a video of Jim Reeves singing. So I still have a record of a Jim Reeves Christmas album that my mum used to play every Christmas when we'd do the Christmas tree.
Aww.
And when I saw Jim Reeves on the screen, I'm like, and my mum passed away back in 1995, so she hasn't been around for a long time, but you know, that still means a lot. And I lost it. I was shaking and I was crying. And then we went into the last room that just, you know, Elvis recorded a lot of his stuff there. And it was just this, it was, you know, how you see some of those videos of people going to church and they, you know, they they have the shakes and that happened that day.
You had a spiritual awakening.
For me, it was a spiritual awakening. And we walked out and I said to Sarah, this is where I belong. That was the pivotal moment. And when we came back to Australia and I went back to my job as a music teacher, that's when we decided I would quit. So term two was my last term, and I quit to become a full-time songwriter of June of 2019. And so I've been a full-time songwriter ever since, not making too much money, as you know. You know, but that was the plan. Sarah's like, if we're going to do this, we're all in, you know, all the way. And because if you want to be a full-time songwriter, you have to be a full-time songwriter. It can't be, you know, I have a full-time job, you know, and I'm going to write on the weekends or whatever. You know, it has to be Monday to Friday, wake up, and that's what you do. And I am probably one of the luckiest men on earth that my wife makes the income. She supports me doing all this. And, you know, fortunately, she's got a great job in the US, which allows me to be able to do all this. And she's an absolute blessing. And
what would even though without them?
Absolutely. Even though I got married late in life, it was the right time, you know.
Yeah.
I met the right person that was that enabled me to be able to do this. And she, yeah, I couldn't have anybody any more 200% supportive of what I do.
It's lovely. You know, and it's a story as old as time that artists have patrons, people that support us. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of how the Nashville thing happened, you know, through my old band buddy moving to Nashville and going, you can write songs in Nashville, man, for other people. I'm like, that's cool. Because I've always loved writing songs and now just to do it. I mean, most of the songs I write are for pitch, and obviously they don't necessarily get pitched and go anywhere. But, you know, I do have the rights where you're in the room with the artist, and obviously you get those cuts, and it's like, okay, it's happening. It's slowly happening. And
it takes time, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it takes time.
There's something beautiful about a song, though, as well, because you do every now and then you hear those stories of this was a song that was written 10 years ago and it finally found its home with the right artist or the right TV show or whatever it is. And sometimes that can happen and you think, you know, yes, you've been writing songs for so long and maybe they've gone absolutely nowhere yet, but there's always potential for that song to do whatever it's going to do. You know, maybe the singer of that song hasn't been born yet, but that doesn't matter. It'll come along at the right time.
I always go back to that, the story of the house that built me. It took those guys 7 years to finish that song, you know, and you know, it's what they consider in country music one of the, you know, one of the better well-written songs, you know, so it's like, that's okay. You know, some hits were 30 minutes, some hits were 7 years.
And you just got to let it, the music world come to you in its own time.
Yeah, and just write the song, finish it. Hopefully it finds a home. If it doesn't, you know, you've got to keep going and not get hung up on one song.
I do feel like I'm going to have to rename the podcast as like an advertising tool for songwriters to move to Nashville, because it is a very common story. It's my own story as well. I went to Nashville in 2019 and had no idea that it was something that you could just do. Not that I've still like, you know, doing it, but still kind of like, how do you do this? But you've actually, I mean, you had the support, you've had a bit of know-how and you've been in Nashville a lot, and now you've signed a publishing deal. So what's the journey been since quitting your job, going, I'm all in, to signing a publishing deal and living in Nashville?
I think probably about 60,000 miles of travel.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Google does the update for the how many miles you've done? There's been a lot of miles of travel. It's kind of funny because I've been back and forth so much. You know, heartbreak amongst all that, depression amongst all that, because being here on my own, you know, going through all that. And one of my co-writers had written back to me the other day when I, you know, I started sharing the news with everyone that I'm finally going to be coming back. You know, he's like, man, through all of this, you always smiled. You always kept a happy face. We know you were going through a hard time, but, you know, you believed that you could do it and there was no plan B.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's been the darkest of days and there's been the brightest of days. You know, it's been such a spectrum. And the hardest part was obviously being separated from Sarah because she's where I want to be, not only for the music, but for her and our cats, you know, and you know, having a house and our home and my heart is, it belongs there and she loves it there as well, which is even more of a bonus that she loves being there. And it's just been, you know, waking up Monday to Friday, writing songs every day, whether they suck or not, it doesn't really matter. Like it's good to try and finish a song. And, you know, I've written with maybe 200, 300 different people over the last few years. Like there's a lot of people I've written with, which is great because I think that, you know, coming back to what I was talking about before, the people you write with, you learn from them. And pitching a lot of songs, you know, pitching opportunities in Nashville, you know, meeting with publishers, and it's that thing of, you know, one thing I've learned talking to publishers, it's not so much about the talent, it's how hard you work, whether you're a good hang, you know, you're a good person, and your network is important as well, because your network is like your net worth, right? Mm. Who do they write with? Oh, they're writing with those people. Ah, he must be doing something good then, kind of thing. Yeah. So that's kind of how you get the interest. And obviously pitching is how you meet the publishers. There's certain pitch events that you can go to in Nashville where you're getting your songs in front of publishers, and that presented me with the opportunity where I met my publisher. I pitched to her last August. I knew who she was, and you know, I've taken meetings with you know, with Warner, Banner, Demolition, and a few other, you know, MV2, and you know, it's when you're taking those first kind of meetings, it's just like, it's like dating, as they say. You know, you're just kind of getting to know each other a little bit. So yeah, there's nothing kind of serious on the table at all at that point. And then, you know, pitching to my publisher, Debbie, you know, she took a copy of the song Raised Right and loved it, and just kind of stayed in touch with her since then. And saw her again in Nashville, December. We're at a writer's round together, and that was in May this year that we're at a writer's round together. She's like, you know, would you like to do something? And I go, well, here's my situation with the Esther. I don't know when I can come back. And that's when she's like, well, do you need a sponsor?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not sure how all that works. And that's kind of how that led into, you know, me signing the deal was, you know, we're talking about that, and she wanted to get me back so I could write for her. So
that's beautiful. So she, in a way, she's sponsored you so you can come back into the country, but also enabled you to continue doing what you love.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's rapped. She actually, I guess a quick part of her history was she signed Blake Shelton back in the day to his first record deal. And she found the song Austin for him, and she also managed him for a couple of years.
Wow.
So she's an industry veteran from the 90s, and she started her publishing company in 2012. So she's a wonderful, wonderful person, and she's also a songwriter as well. She's a musician. So she gets it, and she knows how hard it is, and I know there's going to be mentoring. Because I know when you sign a deal, it's not like, bang, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
You know, going to have cuts left, right, and center. You've still got to develop yourself as a songwriter as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I know potentially this next year there'll be even more development for me as a songwriter, working with, you know, artists that she'll set me up with and other writers that she'll set me up with to even help me grow more as a songwriter. Because, you know, it's never – like I said before, you never stop learning.
A question I'd really like to ask you is, what would you say the biggest highlight of your songwriting career has been so far?
Wow. That's one particular thing. That's too hard to pinpoint, I guess. I mean, for the now, it was signing the publishing deal and obviously getting the O-1 visa. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that feels really, really good. There's so many things. I guess, you know, having songs in the top 10 NSAI song contests, it's been really great. You know, Sandy Facey, the songs I've written with her, you know, them having some number ones, you know, being number one on country radio has been really cool. You know, the song I wrote with Emily even had number one on country radio back in 2020. That was actually my first cut as a songwriter, so that would be a highlight too.
Yeah.
And that was our first co-write together. I think in her podcast she talks about that, and that was our first song that we'd written together, and you know, she ended up releasing it. You know, going back in the day, a band I was in called Square One, we signed a record deal in Japan and the UK.
Wow.
We supported Toto, Hanson, Eric Martin from Mr. Big, Taxi Ride, Killing Heidi. Yeah, been on Fox FM, you know, a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a song in 2003 called Stronger Now for one of the Bali bombing survivors, Nicole McLean.
Yeah.
And through a friend of mine who was also at the Bali bombing, she had said that Nicole and 60 Minutes were going to do a special on the 1 year anniversary in 2003, and they wanted her to sing Angels by Robbie Williams. And I'm like, jokingly, I said, I'll write her a song. And I ended up writing her a song, and she loved it. And we recorded it with a producer friend at Fox FM. And we ended up, you know, they ended up using that and did a film clip with her for 60 minutes for the 1 year anniversary. And we performed that song together up at Canberra for the 1 year anniversary at Parliament House. Got to meet Prime Minister John Howard, who was the Prime Minister at the time. All the heads of state were there. It was a big thing. So that is definitely one of my highlights, because it was a song I wrote on my own, and it meant so much to her and a lot of the people in that community that went through, you know, loss of different kinds of loss than
trauma.
And then in 2012 she wrote a book called Stronger Now as well. And there's one chapter of the book that, you know, talks about the song and everything. And so that was, you know, my eldest daughter at the time, she thought that was, you know, because, you know, as kids, yeah, whatever, my dad does music, blah, blah, blah. But when she saw that I was in a book, she was super impressed. Because she was 12. She was 12 at the time. So, you know, coming like that kind of year, that was like, she was super impressed that I was in a book. So that was, I guess that's pretty cool. So there's been, you know, throughout my career, I guess there's been chapters that have each had a highlight that it's like, that was pretty cool. And you know, when you're preparing an O-1 visa, you have to prepare all that stuff. So it's all kind of fresh on my mind at the moment, because my petition was 451 pages long, full of all of that stuff that I've done over the past 30 years. So it's just like, you know, because you have those potential questions of like, what are the highlights of your career? You know, when you're getting asked that, and it's like, how? But I never got asked that question. I was only asked, what are you going to be doing in Nashville? So it was
fair enough. Well,
yeah. You've so done a lot, I had all this preparation. So
we got to use it now.
I got to use it now. So yeah, as even that first band, you know, I was talking about earlier, you know, I was probably 17 by the time we put on our own show at the St. Mary's Hall in Sale. I'm not sure if it's still there, but it was across from St. Patrick's campus. We put on our own show, hired the PA. We went crazy with lights, and we sold the place out, and we made enough money to buy our own mixing desk and speakers. So that was pretty cool. You know, when you're a teenage kid and you're kind of like, yeah, hometown hero kind of thing, with your own band, and considering I wasn't, you know, really a great singer, but I think it was like that thing of, I look back at the pictures and stuff, because I had long peroxide blonde hair and, you know, totally into the hairband stuff like I mentioned before, but somehow I sold it, even though I wasn't a great singer. There was just that, you know, I had the energy and the personality for it back then. Not so much now. I don't want to obviously do the, you know, that's why I like doing the songwriter, being the guy behind the scenes kind of thing. But I think when you're young, you have that ability to just go for it and just like all or nothing kind of thing. So that would even be a highlight. You know, it's like, yeah, if I put a scrapbook together, there's just a lot. I mean, when I looked at the petition, I'm like, wow, that's a lot.
Sounds like you're pretty happy. When you look back, you are a very positive person and obviously very optimistic. What is sort of the next half of, you know, your life? As a songwriter now, you've decided that you're going to do that side of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But what would like just blow your mind if you could achieve X, Y, Z as a goal?
Well, obviously a number one song on country radio in the US. I mean, I think for every songwriter and I think even bands, you look back at Savage Garden and INXS and any Aussie band that's come before us, you know, it's to achieve that kind of success. But, you know, if that was like, you know, you kind of like the dream kind of thing, that would be great. But I feel what I've already done has a certain level of success to it as well. But I think, you know, playing guitar for some people like Sandy and Craig Lloyd were just down in Tasmania for the awards show down there, and I played guitar for both of them, and I hadn't done that in a long time, and that felt really cool being just the guitar player, because I did that in Square One. You know, I wasn't the lead singer.
Yeah,
I was just a guitar player that did backing vocals, and that was fun. So I really enjoyed playing guitar for Sandy on the songs that we wrote, and you know, and song that I wrote with Craig Lloyd, I got the chance to do that as well as a couple of his other songs. So that would be a cool thing. There's some artists I write with in Nashville, like Courtney Taylor, Court Taylor, she's known as. She just released a song that I was a co-writer on, and she's a really great Americana, nearly like a Brandy Clark kind of vibe. And, you know, we've kind of jokingly back and forth, yeah, I'll play guitar for you, you know, blah, 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 when you go on tour. Yeah. I mean, I just don't see myself touring, but that would be kind of like a, you know, a pipe dream that it'd be cool to maybe just for a season play guitar for somebody, you know, just rhythm guitar, not mm-hmm. obviously lead guitar, because I think I made it obvious I'm not a lead guitar player.
That's all right. Not everyone is.
That would be crazy. You know, a Grammy, American Music Award. That would be kind of cool to have on the mantelpiece, because I've got nothing at the moment apart from the NSAI award that I have, because I was new member of the year. yeah, new member of the year in 2020. Let me think, what else? I guess for Sarah and I, a couple goals. I think now we can actually start planning our life now that we're going to be back together full time.
In the same country helps, yeah.
In the same country. So we even threw out the idea of, like, maybe in 8 or 10 years' time we'd set up a farm just outside of Nashville, and a writer's retreat that would have animals like goats and cows and stuff that people can just come and write songs, and there'll be animals, and because we both love animals, and mm-hmm. and we thought that might be a fun thing to do, you know, down the track. So that could potentially be on the cards. I mean, be careful what you wish for. Obviously, we've made it pretty clear we want to be in Nashville, and it happened. So that would be cool, because, you know, yeah, like I said, we love animals and we love the outdoors. And, you know, having come from the country, that feels kind of a natural thing for us to do.
Mm.
And then, you know, we're still involved in the songwriting side of things, and people can come out, because I also cook as well, you know, if
mm-hmm. –
When I was in high school, and when we finished year 12, you know, the band I was in at the time, we all moved to Melbourne from Sale. Uh-huh. And I had the opportunity to be an apprentice chef, and it could have and I chose music. So, but I, you know, my wife is excited to get me back to Nashville so I can get back to cooking for her as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think as creatives, it's not just music. I think we all have something else that we're creative with, and food is that's my other outlet that I love doing. So
mm-hmm.
That would be something that I'd probably get a proper chef to do it all, but just like work with the chef to go, okay, when we you know, have people come and they get the food, here's the ideas, and you can execute being the professional chef. So that would be cool.
I love it. I've met quite a few chefs who are also musicians, and you're right, it's a very creative thing.
Yeah.
You got to have something creative if you're doing it as a profession as well. I think you do need to have something that is just for the sake of creation on the side, even if it's just journaling, which could, you know, whatever it is. But
I started doing that. I read a book called The Artist's Way. It was recommended by NSAI when I was doing The Rise back in 2020 during COVID. And you know, there's something called morning pages where you just, you know, and I do it the mornings that I write, and it's just to kind of get all the negative thoughts out and just write about if you're feeling crap, write about feeling crap, if something mm-hmm. great's happened. And I also incorporated a gratitude thing where I, you know, write down what I'm grateful for, and then I end with some affirmations, you know, you know, hey, this and this is great, blah, 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 kind of thing. So that's a really great tool as well, that journaling side of thing. Things.
And so good for your mental health.
Yes, absolutely.
Which we all need, especially if we're creative these days. We're all slightly insane.
Absolutely. And that whole, making food. And I remember when my daughters were young and it was like, Dad, how does this taste so good? And I go, it's made with love, and songs made with love. I think that's the magic ingredient with songs and with cooking food, you know, is like the heart and soul you put into, you know, making a song or making food. I think that's my creativity side.
So beautiful. All right. Give me some advice, best advice that you've ever received from someone else, or something that you've just learnt to live by now as a songwriter.
No excuses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have used 1,000 excuses, you know, but it's too hard. you know, Nashville's so far away, I have to always come back to Australia, you know, all that kind of stuff. If you really want something, there's no excuse. There, you know, as I've had to climb the biggest mountain to get where I am right now, and you know, when I get back to Nashville, I'll be able to stand on that, you know, that top point and look out and go, okay, this has been a tough 3 years, but we got here. So yeah, if you really want something bad enough, no excuse. Because you know, there's people that live in different states in the US. Oh, it's too hard to get to Nashville. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, what's your excuse kind of thing? And when I was at Key West Songwriters Festival last year, hanging out with some people, you know, people you meet in groups, people, Skip Black, who's a writer for, I think, Demolition, and he'd come out for dinner for my birthday because he was just kind of hanging around the people.
Yeah.
And Sarah had said to him, hey, what advice can you give my husband? And he said, don't give up. Don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's, you know, that was really great because he was in front of me. He was telling me that, and he's had success, you know, in various degrees, and he's a really great guy. It's like, okay, well, that makes a whole lot of sense because I don't feel like doing that anytime soon. So I think, you know, the moment you stop is the moment the dream's over, isn't it? And mm-hmm. I mean, how do you restart that? You know, it's really hard to restart something when you know, if you have to stop. And, you know, obviously people have their challenges in life. They might have children. So it's like, how does this look now for me?
Mm.
You know, I'm a dad or a mom or whatever. You know, you're still not going to use that as an excuse. If you really want it, you're still going to, okay, how do I go around this now? How do I step over it? You know, it's just going to take me a little bit longer, you know, like it has for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought I'd be back in Nashville much sooner than this, you know,
yeah.
Full time. And it's just having that hope and faith and the optimism,
yeah.
You know, that this is where I'm meant to be. I feel it in my bones, that thing of knowing that you're true north, you're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, it's your life. You get to choose how you live it. Don't let anyone else dictate what's okay and what's not okay and what you have to do and what you should do. It's like, no, it's just your life and you have to live with it, whatever choice you make.
And even if you do have those sucky days that you just like, oh, everything, you know, feels like the earth has fallen on top of you, it's okay. Mm. You know, it's that it's okay to not be okay day, you know, like that is such a true thing for mental health. You know, I've had plenty of those since I've been back on this trip to Australia. It's just like, all right, I'm going to sit with this and just feel miserable today, but it's okay. Mm. I know I'm going to wake up tomorrow feeling better. The blue sky is always there. Some days are just cloudy. And that comes back to the whole not giving up thing, and there's no excuse.
Yeah.
There's been plenty of mornings I've woken up. You know, I wake up at 5:30 in the morning when I'm here and I start writing at 8 a.m. You know, I go through a whole process in the morning to get ready,
mm-hmm.
you know, go for a walk, do meditation, all that kind of stuff. So then at 8 a.m., I'm, you know, I'm mentally ready to go because obviously they've already spent half the day in Nashville. You know, it's like 3, 4, 5 p.m. for them. So I gotta get their level at that time of the morning. And that comes back to what I said about the no excuses. Like if you want something bad enough, you will make it happen through anything, you know.
I love it. If you could go back and talk to yourself, I mean, it may be along the same lines, but say you could talk to that 16-year-old or even 12-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
Just say stay on the course, man. Keep going. Mm-hmm. Keep believing in yourself and believe what your mum told you.
What did your mum tell you?
Well, she just believed in me so much. And there was one thing, you know, before she passed away and after I moved to Melbourne and they would do the trek every gig, you know, I wasn't necessarily playing the originals every single weekend, but
mm-hmm.
they would take the, you know, the 3-hour drive to come and see me play. Then they'd drive back to Sale, you know?
Yeah.
But I will always remember her saying, get up there and kick ass, son. That was her advice to me every time. Yeah. And she always believed in me. And like I said before, my first two EPs ain't nothing special, but you know, she always encouraged me. They let me do music. I mean, some parents would be like, oh, you know, you're never doing that. There's nothing comes of it kind of thing. But her belief in me helped me get through. And then finding Sarah finally picked up what I'd lost when my mum passed away. It was that somebody that actually believed in me enough to go, hang on, you can do this. Because, you know, after mum passed away, dad, you know, it was challenging for him. So he wasn't able to be that encouraging person like my mum was, because she just loved music. Like I said before, she, you know, brothers that were musicians. So, it would just be stay the course, remember what your mum said, you know, remember how much she believed in you that you got this kind of thing.
We all need that one person.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all it takes, is just that one person. And obviously some people strive for more than that, and a lot more than that. They need that feedback, and they need that, and hence why people become rock stars and, you know, rule the world and all that kind of stuff, because they feed off that energy, and that's great.
Yeah, it's different.
And that was a lot of fun when I was younger, you know, getting all that adulation of like, oh my God, you know, it's amazing. But I guess I wouldn't say too much. I wouldn't want to interfere with how things went. You know, I met my wife at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, if it was any time sooner, we wouldn't have been ready to be together, you know, because we've been sober for 6 years. We gave up alcohol together.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel that a part of getting to where we are now wouldn't have happened if we kept drinking, you know, because I'm able to stay focused, not hungover ever. You know, I can get up in the morning and do what I need to do, and I'm not wasting time, you know, recovering, because as you get older, it takes longer to recover.
What a waste of time.
Yeah. So all of those things, and even, you know, we have to have those failures in life, you know, whether you look at it as a failure or just a mistake or whatever it is, but, you know, we have to learn to become, you know, better people from, oh, that wasn't really a great thing, you know, but I've learned from that, and I know how to become a better person or a better songwriter or, just all around better from things that may not have been great at the time, that you thought were great at the time, but it turns out they wasn't so great. But, you know, the Rascal Flatts song, you know, the winding road, the broken road that led me straight to you, you know.
Yeah. I'm a big believer that we don't always necessarily get what we want. Like, children always want everything, but I think we always get what we need. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's my optimistic belief, is like everything always comes for what we need at the right time, and I am where I am when I'm meant to be there, which is,
yeah,
it's just an easier way to go through life, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, it's as hard as it can be some days. You're just like, why does this get so hard? But I mean, you know, when I got my passport back last week, and I'm like, okay, everything's okay now. The anxiety and all the stress of everything has just gone, and I just feel so relaxed. I feel relaxed now, and it's like, man, I've got something to look forward to, getting back to Sarah, and we can actually start planning our life. And yeah, it's
so beautiful.
We're meant to be here, and you know, Sarah moving, and there was an immigration ban when she actually moved over in 2021, but they let her in the country, and she immigrated, and so she even went through huge challenges to get to the US. You know, through COVID and everything. So it's like, she believed, yeah, we're meant to be here. You'll be here when the time is right, you know? And I think if I'd become a permanent resident already through the spousal visa, I wouldn't have, you know, had the O-1 visa and got the artist visa and signed the publishing deal. That wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, hello, there's the silver lining, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
there's always a silver lining.
Yeah, and it took a little while to obviously realize that, because I wanted to be in Nashville now full time, you know. But you know, going through that grind and going through the pain, you know, no pain, no gain, all that, you know, no risk, no reward. All as cliche as all that is, it is so true. It really is. Like you know, I think we all experience it on different levels. Whether you're chasing a music dream or a sport dream or whatever it may be, you know, we all go through it. And I think it's how you handle it is whether you come out on the other side positively, because some people just get, you know, they get destroyed by all the challenges one after the other. You can just, you know, give up, like I said before. And then it's like, oh, why is life so tough to me? And it's like, I could have been going on about that for the last 3 years, but, you know, I kept all that to myself, and obviously to my wife, she heard about it, but just show up, be happy, and you know, to write songs every day, that's still an amazing thing to be able to do, whether it's via Zoom or, you know, from here in Australia with friends that I love, you know, writing songs with. That's still a great thing to be able to do.
You have a great
energy. Now, to be able to go back, it's like, all right, now we're on. Now let's get serious. I don't have that, you know, the 3-month thing. Oh, I've got to go. Yeah. You know, I've got to leave in 80 something days or whatever. It's like, because you're setting up rights 2 or 3 months in advance, and it's like, and some people won't do the Zoom, and that's okay. I understand. And it's like, you know, you can't write with those people till you get back in person. So it's like, you know, I'm going to miss writing with that person because I learn stuff from them, you know.
Yeah. No, it's going to be great, and you're going to really enjoy it. And I'm excited for you. It's going to be a whole new chapter. And honestly, I've never met an artist, including myself, who doesn't want all their dreams to come true right now. And I do think that learning patience is something that we're all experiencing, but that's the frustration of that learning patience is sometimes where the best creativity and art comes from. So I've learned to enjoy it.
That's true. Enjoy that journey.
Yeah, you have to. You have to learn to enjoy the journey. Otherwise, what are we doing it for? The last question, which I like to ask everyone, which is just a little thing that I find interesting, is if you could co-write or work with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Is it just one person or could it be two?
Well,
three or four?
Try one. I'd love to.
I would say John Lennon.
I used to
impersonate John Lennon at Bobby McGee's in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I was a waiter at a restaurant in Melbourne called Bobby McGee's, and I was John Lennon. I'd walk in and say, "Hello, welcome to Strawberry Fields. My name is John Lennon from the Beatles." you know, I had the glasses and stuff, and I would sing Beatles songs to, you know, the restaurant people, the patrons, You know, I had an emotional week last week when they released the new song, and just hearing John's voice so clean and clear like that for the first time again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just he's a very interesting man, a great songwriter. You know, he wanted world peace. That would be the one person. I'd just love to be in a room with him hanging out. Second, if I can say alive, would be Butch Walker. He's also my man crush. He's produced Pink and Katy Perry, and he's also an incredible artist. He lives in Nashville now. I actually ran into him at what's his name that sings Footloose? Kenny Loggins.
Mm-hmm.
At a Kenny Loggins show, I saw Butch Walker for the first time in person in my life, and I went up and said hello, and that was pretty cool because he lives in Franklin, which is obviously not far from Nashville. So,
uh-huh.
That is probably the alive person that I would love to write with. He's very, very cool.
Well, we all just said dreams will come true. Yeah, right time, right place.
Absolutely. Now, and I know he's worked with some people that I've worked with, so you just never know, right?
It's your network, right? That's what you did. You said that.
Absolutely.
Yep. network
is your net worth.
Exactly. I love it. And if you ever do get to work with him, you have to tell me all about it because I'd love to hear what comes
absolutely
out of that. That'd be awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to share finishing up that we haven't talked about or that's coming up that you want everyone to know about? I'm going to get all of your links so people can check out. I've got your one link tree.
Oh, the link tree,
I've got the link tree.
Link tree.
So
that
good.
Is the best thing ever.
I'm going to attach that to the blog on the website, songwritertrist.com, and I'll also attach it to all the podcasts so people will get that. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we finish?
No, the Linktree's got like links to everything, you know, articles that I've done and all that kind of stuff and the songs that I'm a co-writer on, the links to the Spotify. No, I guess not. I want to give a shout out to Perrin from Market the Music for obviously connecting us.
Mm-hmm.
Give a shout out to him for, you know, helping me out, getting some media and stuff just in relation to signing the deal and getting back to Nashville. He's been really great.
Yeah, well, hopefully it leads to many more things.
Yeah, cool. All right, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
appreciate
Michael.
It.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining our Songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe.
To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrist.com. The crowd, no one can hear.